So, welcome to the Buddhaloka Buddha Centre, the Buddha Society of Victoria. So, this is the Tuesday evening meditation evening together, which is it's a nice opportunity during the week, isn't it, to meditate together. And as I say, nearly every time, how supportive that is for our practice and for the meditation. It's very interesting to see, actually. And this evening I thought, because Sunday, I gave a talk on greed, and seeing greed as one of the most important things in the current crisis with the climate change and the environment, it being driven by greed. And what can we do about that? And of course, you know, the things we can do is to address greed, and that's what I was to a certain extent talking about yesterday, and to understand it as well, because the Buddha said that greed is one of the very strong things that leads to suffering. He said three things did: greed, hatred, and delusion. These are three strong roots that we have in every human being that's not enlightened. Fortunately, it's not the whole picture. We also have very strong roots of the positive, so non-greed, the Buddha called it. So this can be generosity, kindness, selflessness, it's not thinking of oneself, and loving kindness instead of hate, and instead of delusion, wisdom. So these are the positive qualities that we have. But one of the things that he recommended for dealing with greed was the bringing something that's the opposite of greed, to bringing that up, to counteract greed in us, to develop that, and to condition ourselves with that good quality instead of the quality of greed, what I need, what I want, and, you know, all this sort of thing. So one of those things that counteracts greed, it's the opposite, is contentment. Contentment. And this is something, contentment is this feeling of, I'll go into it a little bit more, of being happy to be here. That's what I'm going to use as the theme for this evening. This is a phrase that Ajahn Brahm uses, and I like very much, because for me that brings up a feeling of contentment when I say happy to be here, you know. And for some people they may think this is like a fairy floss sort of approach to life, you know. But being happy to be here when things are going well is very easy. But when things are going difficult, there are difficulties in our life, there's sickness, there are disappointments, there is separation, you know, we lose people, either relationships break up, people die, these sort of things. Still to be happy to be here, that becomes quite tough. So it's a practice of contentment with whatever we find we're experiencing. So it's not an easy practice, but it's one that brings a lot of satisfaction and happiness, because contentment really is happiness, actually. It's that happiness. Contentment is something that doesn't move. So I talk a little bit about that. So I called this evening Happy to Be Here, the Happy Hour. So happy to be here, the happy hour. We all know what the happy hour is. Is it only an hour? I don't think it is, actually. It goes on. Sometimes it goes on for hours and hours. So the thing with this happy hour, however, is there's no headaches afterwards and no complications to untangle later. Because I think these happy hours often lead to a lot of difficulties in people's lives. And as I say, you know, this is something that counteracts greed, but it's also something, when we can learn to develop positive qualities, they can fuel the meditation, they can support the meditation. Because the Buddha said, it is from happiness, from a happy mind, that samadhi, the mind comes together, the mind develops this one-pointedness, or stillness, as Ajahn Brahm calls it. But not only that, when we learn in the meditation, what we learn in the meditation is like reconditioning the mind, creating a new habit to look at things in terms of, say, happy to be here, to be content, to encourage this quality. And when we do that, we can use that in our daily life. It's not only in the meditation, because the meditation is really a way to start a new habit, a positive habit, a conditioning, and we have to bring that into our daily life to make it really, to make it even stronger, but to bring happiness to our lives. So this is the essence of the Buddha's teaching, really, is to reduce the negative or overcome the negative and to develop the positive, the wholesome, and maintain it. This is an important thing. And the reason why these positive emotions, like this evening, contentment, there's many others, you know, thankfulness, we call it gratitude, there's metta, loving kindness, there's compassion, there's joy with others' successes, and upeka, this is equanimity. So there's many of these positive qualities. But what they do for the meditation, how they work for the meditation, is that they reduce the hindrances, the obstacles to meditation, and that the Buddha mentions again and again. So this is the purpose of developing a wholesome emotion like contentment. And then it overcomes the hindrances. I'll mention them because they are what blocks meditation. You know, people often think, how do you develop this deep meditation? The way to do it is to overcome, to reduce these hindrances, and then it will happen by itself. So this is the, and not only does it support the meditation, it supports wisdom, because the Buddha said these hindrances, they block the meditation, the stillness of the mind, the one-pointedness of the mind, and they block wisdom too. So it's pretty much the same. And when we overcome them in the meditation, then wisdom is empowered. We can actually see things more clearly. And if it's very deep wisdom, we can see things as they truly are, not as we wish them to be or as whatever. So we can see very clearly without these disturbances, these obstacles to clear seeing, without these things that cloud our vision. And that's sensual desire. This is desire for any of the senses. You know, when we're sitting in meditation, we start thinking about cricket, football, tennis, whatever it is. This is all connected with the five senses. You think about politics, you think about music, you know, if you think about any of these things, painting, videos you've seen, discussions you've had with people, all connected with the five senses. And in deep meditation, these five senses are left far, far behind. So the mind goes within itself and is not interested in the five senses. So that's the first one. And then the second one, pretty obvious, is viyapada. This is ill will. This is all shades of negativity, from irritation, annoyance, right up to road rage. And the third one, of course, is drowsiness and sleepiness. These are the dullness of the mind and the body. And the next one is restlessness and remorse. Restlessness. This is where the mind cannot settle. It keeps going, looking for happiness, moving from one thing to the other. And we can, I think it's a very common experience. People can identify with that. And remorse, or worry, thinking about the things we've done and said and worrying about those. And the last one is doubt. Doubt about, classically they say Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. You know, was the Buddha really enlightened? Do the teachings really work? Were they really practitioners, monks and nuns, who achieved the things that the Buddha spoke about? But more than that, really one of the biggest doubts for many people is a doubt that they can do it. You can't do meditation. Actually, Ajahn Brahm's always saying that. You can't do it. It happens when we get out of the way. But that doubt in our own ability, you know, is something that sabotages us, that makes it very difficult for us to, for the meditation to develop. So this, that sort of hindrance is an important one. And that's where, you know, myself and particularly Ajahn Brahm are like encouraging people, you know, to meditate, to develop it. And I always like that saying, you can't do this wrong. Because people worry about that, especially when they start meditation. They think, oh, am I doing it right? You know, is this the correct way? And so on. Of course, that's an obstacle. It's going to disturb their minds, you know, and that doubt doesn't allow the mind to settle down. It keeps it busy worrying, you know, maybe there's a better way to do it, you know, a different teaching that may be better for me and so on. So this is part of what these positive emotions do. They overcome and they reduce these hindrances to the meditation. And as I mentioned, really the whole of the Buddhist path is about letting go of the negative and developing and maintaining the positive. It sounds very simple, but it's quite a challenge actually to do that in daily life, to recognize when something unwholesome has arisen in our mind, something negative, and maybe manifesting in our speech and actions, and to how to let go of that and then to develop positive qualities in the mind. In actual fact, as I often point out, the shortcut is to develop the positive qualities and maintain them. Then there's not much chance for the negative qualities to come up. But that's not always easy. So tonight, as I said, the happy to be here, happy hour. And there's a nice, just talk a little bit about contentment, because you don't hear much about contentment. You know, it's not something that is greatly praised. It's really the opposite of what, you know, we're encouraged to do, which is be discontent. Why should we settle for what we've got now? We could do much better. We can get this. We can get that. We can change our partner. We can change our job. We can get a better house. We can get a better car. And this is, of course, the message that's often out there, isn't it, that we see with other people keeping up with the Joneses, they call it. Like one saying says, don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Drag them down to your level. That's good. Much easier, I think. So there is a saying from the Buddha which is very nice. He says that health is the most precious gain and contentment the greatest wealth. A trustworthy person is the best kinsman, best relative. Nibbana, enlightenment, the highest bliss. So that's very nice. So contentment is the greatest wealth. When we feel content, we are, in a sense, there's this feeling of fulfillment. We don't have anything we need. We don't have anything we want. So this is like a wealth. So somebody who doesn't really have a lot of money can still be quite wealthy. And somebody who's very wealthy and still wants so much, needs so much, in a sense, can be quite poor. So this contentment is like a wealth. And it's, as I say, it's what we are seeking, really. We're seeking when we look for happiness in the sense pleasures, in seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. This is what we're looking for, this contentment, this sense of coming to peace, but this sort of steady happiness. And I like Ajahn Brahm, as always, comes out with a very good phrase that captures this. For me it does, and maybe it's meaningful for you too. And he says, it's actually talking about happiness, but it applies to contentment. Contentment is not having what you like. Contentment is not having what you like. It's liking what you have. Isn't it? It just turns it around. And that is the secret of happiness, you know, liking what you have here and now. And as I said, this is not the happiness of the future. You know, when we have all these wants, we call them in Buddhism craving or desires, that we'll be happy when we get this, whether it's a new job, a new car, and you finish the exams. Any students here? So this sort of happiness I call never-never happiness, because you get there and then there's another desire. I'll be happy when I get this, when I get that. And it keeps us going, you know, unsatisfied. Because the essence of that wanting is that we're not satisfied. We need something. And when we're needy, we cannot be happy. We cannot be at peace. We cannot be still. So it's a real obstacle to the meditation, this discontent. And contentment, as I said, is a feeling of being satisfied. There's a steadiness, a happiness. There's a peace, and a peace in the mind. The mind is not going all over the place. Because why go anywhere if you're happy to be here? You know, that's a, there's no point. If you're happy to be here, that's fine. And it's a sense of acceptance too, and it brings balance to the mind as well, because the mind that is has that contentment in it, we call it santuti in Pali, doesn't go to the extremes. It's balanced. It doesn't need excitement, and it's not bored. It's in the middle. Contentment is a balanced state of mind. And of course, the reason I mention that it's the opposite of greed is because it's the opposite of discontent. When we're content, we don't need, we don't want anything else. No other place we'd rather be than where we are, just here and now. So this is how contentment, this is describing contentment really. And it's an important part of the Buddha's path, just to mention a little bit more about it, because the Buddha taught a gradual training, he called it a gradual training. And he said, first of all, you have to hear the teachings, you have to hear what he is describing as the path, and then to develop some confidence that, yes, that's worth, you know, giving a go, trying. And of course, you know, if you're inspired, that gives you energy as well. So when you get that faith or confidence, that gives you energy, and then we start to practice, and then we start to put into practice, you know, the ethical code that the Buddha recommended, at least the five precepts. And this is how we can develop more mindfulness of what we're saying and doing, develop the quality of not harming others or ourselves through the five precepts. But then the next factor is contentment. So being content, and this is being content with what we have. For monks and nuns, Buddha always says that it's clothing, food, and a dwelling, or like accommodation, and also medicine in time of sickness. And really, that's the basic necessities, isn't it? Really, the basic necessity, not only for monks and nuns, everyone. But we tend to make a lot more of these things than we need, which I might develop in a minute. Actually, talk about the difference between greed and need. I didn't get the chance yesterday. But this contentment is very, very important, because then the Buddha says we need to learn to restrain our senses, the five senses, and of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. Because if we do not have this contentment, this ability, this happiness to be here now, we'll go out looking for happiness out there. And really the Buddha is talking about the happiness within each of us, the happiness we can get in touch with. Happiness out there through hearing, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, we all know about. And it's usually short-lived, and if it doesn't satisfy, fully satisfy. You know, it's over in a very short time. So the point the Buddha is trying to make is once we have this contentment within, then we don't have to seek all our happiness through the senses. And this is the point of the sense restraint. But really the sense restraint relies on the mind. Mind is one of the senses. Because the mind is what makes the stories up about all the things we see, hear, smell, taste and touch. It makes a big deal of them. But if we're happy to be here inside, we don't need to be out there so much. And then from that, the Buddha says, once we've starting to look within, we're restraining the senses, we're not being swept away by them, And this sense restraint is even more important these days. I'll just mention this too, because one of the biggest things that it's difficult for people to be restrained about, I can see it myself, is the internet, the devices people have. They really, you know, can sidetrack us. They can swallow so much time and attention and arouse, you know, so many emotions, often not positive, you know, of greed or hatred, anger, what we see or hear, or and all these emotions and so on. So this sense restraint that I'm talking about in seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, very important with the internet, to get some freedom for ourselves. Because often I think people feel that, you know, they just can't help themselves. Before they know it, 3 hours have gone, and they haven't, you know, just been looking at the videos or doing emails or whatever it is. So this is something, this is the ability we all have to say no to some of our sense content. I'm not going to go that way, you know, from what I see, hear, smell, taste and touch. I don't have to do that. And this is to get that freedom, to get that choice. And this is an ability that we develop with the Buddha's path. And especially you need it for sila too, for morality, that ability to say no. And that can lead to happiness, that does lead to happiness and well-being actually, and freedom. So he says once we restrain the senses and we've come inside, then we're ready to develop mindfulness and this clear, this full awareness, mindfulness, knowing what's happening in the present moment, and full awareness, the ability to know what's going on around that mindfulness, what's the purpose of the mindfulness that we're doing, is the means we're using for developing mindfulness suitable. So these sorts of considerations in developing mindfulness. And then always the Buddha goes to the deep meditations, because what that does is lead to the abandoning of these hindrances I mentioned. And then once they've gone, then deep meditation, we call them the jhanas, can happen. And then also the insights, the knowledges, seeing things as they truly are, can happen from that, the power of that mind that doesn't have any negative qualities in it for a time. So this is the important part of the path. You know, this contentment is something that allows us to stay inside, stay at home, as it were, so that we can, you know, develop these qualities of the mind, develop this happiness within, and then for the meditation to develop from that. So, yes. So, and maybe just, yeah. Yes, and I was mentioning the other thing that this sense restraint does for us. It gives, not only does it give us the choice, but it allows us to simplify our lives if we can distinguish between needs and wants. This was something I didn't talk about yesterday, but I wanted to. There's a saying from Mahatma Gandhi, I think probably many of you know it, earth provides enough to satisfy every man's needs, but not every man's greed. So this is a very, you know, that really cuts to the core of this greed, the issue of greed. And then, you know, brings up the needs of necessities. And I mentioned them, clothing, food, shelter and medicine, and how much we need. And everything else is a want. There's lots of wants in our lives, that's for sure. And if we can reduce these wants, then we can simplify our lives a great deal, which can be reduce some of the clutter that we have in our minds, make life much easier and simpler. And it's a contribution to the environment, contribution to climate, reducing the effects of climate change, when we can do this, when more people do this, when this becomes, when greed becomes reduced. So very good. And yesterday I told the story of the ice cream factory. Many people here for that one? The children's wishing game. Were you here for that? No. Or maybe I'll tell it again. You, Frank was, and Yasmin was. Yes. It's a nice story, but Ajahn Brahm tells this story of a children's game, and it puts this very, very nicely, actually. There's another story, too, I have, another one of Ajahn Brahm's. And these children were playing this wishing game where if they had a wish, what would they wish for? And the first child was asked, if you have a wish, what would you wish for? And the child wishes for, because it's a hot day, an ice cream. And they say, oh, that's good. You know, you need an ice cream, it's a hot day. And then the person, they play this wishing game, the person that gets the best wish wins. Person who gets the best wish wins. So this child was, you know, that was okay. And then the second child says, I wish for an ice cream factory. Then I can have ice cream any time of the day or night. And the first child feels a bit, wow, that's much better than what I asked for. I only got one ice cream, and this one can ask for, have as many as he likes. But how many ice creams can you eat, really? But anyway, I suppose every day. So this child, it's like one-upmanship, isn't it? You know, so this child, obviously, that was sounded a lot better than the first child. Then the third child said, well, if I have a wish, I wish for $1 billion, and then I would buy an ice cream factory, and I could buy anything else that I wanted with the rest of the money. And when I needed it, I'd want it. And this outdid the second child, actually, who wanted the ice cream factory, and he had the $1 billion. So that was the third child. But the fourth child outdid this one even more, actually, because he wished for an ice cream factory. No, he wished for an ice cream factory, $1 billion, and three more wishes. So all together. He really could have unlimited wishes. He could and the others really felt, they felt quite impressed with it, but they were also a bit glum that they hadn't thought of this is much cleverer, you know, with his, he could, with his wish, he could have ice cream factory, $1 billion, and three more wishes. But the fourth one was the one, the fifth one, sorry, was the one that outdid them all. He said, I wish that I had no more wishes. And Ajahn Brahm says, this is the Buddha to be. So this was the one that won, because this is the wish to be without wishes, because these wishes, these wants are the things that lead to discontent in our mind. There's something we can wish, want, but if we can just be without a wish, without a want, we can come to peace, be content with what we have here and now, like what we have, instead of having to have what we like. And of course, Ajahn Brahm, again, it's a nice way of seeing it, the person that has the unlimited wishes, you know, three more wishes every time, has the freedom of desire. But the last person, the last child, has the freedom from desire. But not many people want that, actually. They don't see the value in that, because we're conned over and over again by desire and wanting, discontent, that once we get this, whatever it is, then we'll be happy. And of course, then we get that or we don't get that, because of course that's the thing. Once you have a desire, you don't have that thing, there's a lack, but also there's a certain degree of fear that we may not get it. When we get it, maybe not quite what we thought it would be, which is often the way. So that's the five children with the wishing game. So it's quite a nice way of putting this contentment into perspective. So now we can do the meditation. It's not actually a happy hour. It's 45 minutes, I think. 45 minutes. So but that's quite a nice length of time. So to begin with, first of all, we can find, just adjust our bodies so that they're comfortable, we can sit still and that they won't cause us disturbance. while we're meditating. And so we can close the eyes and come within and be more in contact with the body, recognizing how it is and making any adjustments that we need. And we can develop the intention, always good to have an intention for the meditation, to be happy to be here for this time. Just content to be here, and there's no other place we'd rather be than here, now. And we can develop that feeling of being happy to be here just by maybe that phrase, I am happy to be here, using that and see how that feels. Or developing the sense of an inner smile, you know, a cozy smile, a relaxed smile. Or like a feeling of being with friends, amongst friends, and being safe. Or a feeling that we don't have to do anything else for the moment, work or whatever it be. We're free of that. We're happy to be here. And there's nothing we need to change at this moment for this time. So just getting in contact with that feeling, however we can arouse it, of being happy to be here. We can bring this feeling of being happy to be here to the body, to relax the body, starting at the top of the head, all around the top of the head, with this friendly, relaxed, at ease sense of being here, being happy to be here, being kind. Moving the attention down the face to the forehead, around the eyes, the cheeks and the mouth. Being happy to be here, relaxing them, softening them. Then moving the attention down to the neck, all around the neck. This warm feeling, this mental massage. Happy to be here. And we can bring to mind the right shoulder starting at the neck and moving along the right shoulder, giving it this mental massage. And moving this warm attention down the right arm, the upper arm all around, through the elbow, to the lower part of the arm, to the wrist, and the right hand, right to the tips of the fingers, relaxed, soothing the right arm. And now we can bring to mind the left shoulder, starting at the neck, and move our attention along the left shoulder, relaxing it, soothing it with this warmth of being happy to be here, content, allowing any tension to dissolve, to soften. And moving the attention down the left arm, the upper arm, all around to the elbow, all around the elbow, and the lower arm to the wrist, the left hand, and right to the tips of the fingers, soothing the left arm, relaxing it, making it comfortable, making it content. Now we bring to mind the back, starting at the shoulders, and we move the attention slowly down the back. This warm, kind, happy to be here attention. Relaxing, allowing any tensions, any tightness to release, to soften, to dissolve. And now we bring to mind the front of the body, starting below the shoulders and moving down the chest with this mental massage. Relaxing and soothing. And down to the stomach area. Soothing it, any hardness, pressure, discomfort, giving it this warm, relaxing attention. And then lower down to the abdomen, below the stomach. Soothing it. Relaxing it, allowing tightness to dissolve, tensions to relax. And now we can bring to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and moving slowly down the right leg all around, starting with the thigh, the upper leg, down to the knee, all around the knee, soothing it, giving it this warm attention, and down the lower right leg. To the ankle, all around the ankle, to the foot, and right to the tips of the toes. Soothing, relaxing. The right leg, happy to be here. And now we bring to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the leg and moving the attention down all around the left leg, around the upper leg, the thigh, down to the knee, and down to the lower left leg. and to the toes, right to the tips of the toes. Soothing with this kind, warm, well-wishing attention. And we become aware of the whole body just sitting here. And this sense of being happy to be here, just in the present moment. The past has gone. The future, who knows? Just happy to be here. This sense of coziness, of being at home. Not wanting for anything. Happy to be here with the present moment, whatever we experience, whether it's the touch, the feeling of the cushion or the seat we're sitting on, hardness or softness, temperature of the air, sounds, all these things. We're just happy to be here with it, and we use this feeling of contentment to colour whatever we experience with this acceptance. We just become aware of whatever we're experiencing, whatever's prominent at the moment. Not getting involved with it, but not rejecting it, pushing it away. Just content. Just noticing with this warm, kind, content feeling. Happy to be here with the present moment, however it is. when we become aware of the breath, we can breathe in, just natural breath, breathing in with this happy to be here, this contentment, this coziness, this wish not to be anywhere else. Happy to be here as we breathe in, and happy to be here as we breathe out, breathing out this contentment to the world, to others. Breathing it in and breathing it out. Colouring the breath with this feeling of contentment. And if thoughts or memories, feelings, whatever comes up in the mind, you can use this feeling of happy to be here. Not trying to, not getting into a fight with it. What we're thinking or feeling. Just having this contentment. And then when we're ready, coming back to the breath. Happy to be here with the breath. Recognizing what's happening in our minds and our bodies, with this feeling of happy to be here. Happy to be here as we breathe in. Happy to be here as we breathe out. The natural breath. close to the end of the meditation, we can just reflect, review how we feel now. Is it different from when we began? Did we feel happy to be here or not? And what caused what we felt during the meditation to arise? What brought it up? What was the condition? And we can share this energy of meditating together here today, this evening, with everyone here, with our family and friends, and all beings everywhere. May they be filled with this feeling of being happy to be here, contentment, safe, cozy, inside. And we can develop the aspiration to develop more of this feeling of happy to be here with whatever we do, wherever we are, whether it's in meditation, at work, at school, wherever we find ourselves, to make it a habit and a refuge too. To make much of it. And lastly, we can anchor this feeling of being happy to be here in the heart or the mind, so we can bring it up any time, day or night. This feeling of contentment, being satisfied, having enough. And now we can slowly open the eyes and move the body to make ourselves more comfortable. So, just to ask if there are any comments or questions, and I always say complaints this evening. That's a very good sign that we're happy to be here. Because when there are no questions, comments, or especially complaints, it means that we were at peace, the mind, the thinking reduced. We were happy to be here. So then there's no need to think, no need to have questions. So this is always, in a way, a good test. You know, if there are lots of questions and comments and complaints, there was a lot of thinking going on. We never came to peace with ourselves, with being here. So this is, always a positive thing for me when I see people don't have the questions, they don't have the comments or the complaints, because it means that the meditation has succeeded, really, has succeeded. And even if, you know, when we, are happy to be here and we see a lot of thinking coming up and we are accepting of that, we're happy for that to be here, then that can reduce by just that action of being content, not wanting to change it. And Ajahn Brahm calls this contentment is the fast track to enlightenment. People are always looking for the fast or the shortcut. Actually, they're always looking for the shortcut. But being content is something that we're not used to. We're not used to. You know, we're actually encouraged to always be discontent, not only with what we have, but with ourselves. We can do much better. We could be much better. We could be much smarter. We could be much better looking. We could be all these things, you know. It's endless. But can we be content with just how we are? And that is actually, you know, a place where we can rest, where we can come to peace and a sense of ease, you know, instead of this relentless, you know, discontent with how we are, how the world is, you know, we need this, we need that. So this is a real training, a different, say, way of conditioning our minds. And the more we can bring up this sort of contentment in the mind, you know, the happier we can be, actually, and realize the wisdom of the Buddha's teaching, especially the Second Noble Truth, where he says that wanting, desire, we call it craving, it's a bit of an old-fashioned word, is the source of unsatisfactoriness, the source of suffering, source of unhappiness. And we can see that when we start to develop the sense of contentment in ourselves. And when we do have that sense of contentment and peace, we can actually see much more clearly what needs to be done, you know, and how best to go about it. So this is, it's a much better place to come from than from a mind that has got lots of agendas. So, do you have any phrases that you find bring up contentment? Happy to be here, I think it's a great phrase. Ajahn Brahm does have this other phrase, good enough, but I never like good enough. I'm discontent with good enough. Because I always think, I don't know about you, but good enough sounds like second best to me. You know, oh, it's good enough. You know, that sort of thing. So I don't like that at all. I find that doesn't bring up contentment in me. I think, well, you know, could be better, which is the opposite of contentment. So, but when I think of happy to be here, that does work for me, actually. I think, yeah, that's good. I don't have to go anywhere. And that sense of peace. But whatever we find, whatever phrase, you know, or whatever perception we can bring up, whatever concept we can bring up that brings contentment, that's useful. So you might have noticed, you know, not having to go anywhere, not having to do anything, that might work. The sense of being cozy, being self-contained, being at home. These things for me are quite good things for bringing up that perception of contentment, that I don't need. I'm happy to be here. So whatever works, you know, for us to bring up these positive states of mind, very useful. And as I say, when we combine them with the meditation object, what we're combining with the meditation object is the feeling of happy to be here, the feeling of contentment. And that feeling combined with the breath or the feet, whatever we're using for the meditation object, makes it much more attractive, much more interesting. And we can stay with it because we don't want to, if we really got that feeling of happy to be here, we don't want to move away from where we are, you know. We're really content here. And this is something, you know, we can develop. The more we develop with the meditation object, the more the mind will start to settle down, become peaceful, and then go into deeper states. Because once the mind has got a certain momentum, once we've developed that that peace and that contentment to be with the meditation object, it will naturally develop this momentum where the Buddha says, you know, that this happiness and joy comes up. And the deep, once there's happiness and joy coming up in the mind, we don't want to be anywhere else anyway. This is the idea of positive emotions. Once we've got those, there's nowhere else we want to go. This is the party we want to be at. We have no desire to be anywhere else. And that's when the mind can go within itself and develop these very deep states of meditation. But for us, it's to get to that stage where the mind, where we're happy to be with the breath, we're content to be with the breath or whatever the object be, so that we can reach that stage where that automatic process takes over, which the Buddha says, you know, you don't have to will that this is the case. It happens naturally. You know, if there is that happiness in that mind, in the mind, this gladness, they sometimes call it, then this joy will come up, and then this this peace, this pasadi, this peace and stillness of the body and the mind, and then from that, a happiness comes up of what a pleasurable experience this is, and then samadhi, then the mind can come together, go really deep. So this is the idea of developing these positive emotions for the meditation and for our lives. Because sometimes, you know, happy to be here, as I say, is a tough practice. You know, I sometimes think of people who have had strokes. You know, you see people who have strokes. Do people know anyone who's had a stroke? Some people, you know, just trapped. It's the mind trapped in a body they can't use. They can't, maybe they can't walk, can't move their arms. Some, I've heard of some people who can, the only thing left is the eyelids. You know, I think, my goodness. And if you can, if you haven't developed a sense of ease and peace with yourself, you know, this, it would be very difficult if you're in prison, in a prison of a body, and if you don't have that sense, if you have a sense of contentment, even though you're in prison and it's a difficult situation, you can't do what you used to do, you can't maybe even communicate, speak, you can still be at ease with yourself and find some peace and acceptance of this situation. Yeah, it's not the way I'd like. But, you know, and that is really tough practice, to be happy to be here when things are really unpleasant. And I think I've mentioned before, I know one man in Western Australia who was going to the Buddhist Society of WA, and he's a very good advertisement for this, had a stroke, and he has very, you know, he's got a bit of speech back, but very little, you know, mobility and everything. But when I go to visit him, other people tell me it's the same when they visit him, he's radiant. He's really, I mean, you know, he's pleased to see the person, obviously, that's part of it, of course. But there's a sense that he is at ease with himself, at peace with himself, accepting that situation and not thinking, like very naturally most people think, why me? You know, there was a very interesting story that I read, or a video really, that I saw of a person who had a terrible cycling accident, you know, a push bike. And she was I think 6 breaks in the spine, and you know, had a lot of internal bleeding, all this sort of thing. But her road to recovery came when she moved from "why me" to "why not me." Interesting, isn't it? And that's the realization that it's really a universal experience. Once we see things with that wisdom, then the pain of our situation is no longer a personal tragedy. It's something we can bear, actually, when we see it in context. When we see things with wisdom, when we understand things, it really helps a lot. Wisdom is the best medicine. So this the sense of training the mind, developing positive emotion, very useful. And it's very good if we do this before we get to a situation where we have a stroke or something like that. Having a body, this is all possible. And, you know, so if we have developed that sense of contentment, being our own best friend, that's what I use for metta or loving kindness, then when we are, if we are in that situation, we can make the best of it. And to me, you know, and I see this, you've probably seen it with people you know too, someone who is really sick but is still radiant really just amazes me. Like I see, probably many of you don't know her, but Ajahn Wayama, she's in Western Australia, started the nuns' monastery there, but she has a degenerative brain disease, and so, you know, losing, can't speak much, you know. The nun who's looking after has to do the interpreting and everything for her, and has to turn her at night and so on, and it's pretty incredible, and losing mobility, you know, in a wheelchair and all this sort of thing. But just radiant when you see her, you know, I think, oh my goodness, could I do that? It's inspiration, isn't it? Because what it's pointing to is really the mind that she's developed, the mind we can all develop, you know, which doesn't have to suffer with the body, doesn't have to go the way of the body. And you hear that with the Buddha's advice he gave to very old laymen that visited him, Nakalapita. He said, even though your body may be sick, do not let your mind be sick. And that is something we can all do to some degree, you know. And the more we know the mind, the more comfortable we with the mind, we can do it better and better. So I like to encourage everybody, try and develop more contentment in our lives, you know, and see the results of that. This is what we're actually looking for. So I hope you find this useful. It helps your meditation and helps your life. So I'd like to finish there. And those who would like to, if you wish to, you can. We can bow to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. He was the most content, amongst the most content.